Bringing the discussion of presidential use of signing statements in the National Defense Authorization Act full circle. Today on Principles and Policies. Hello, and welcome once again to Principles and Policies. I am your host again today, Chuck Michaelis. I am the Executive Director of Camp American and the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy. And just for your edification, you can find us on the internet at www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. In Camp American, you can find at www.campamerican.com. Not campamerica.com, campamerican.com. Once again, our normal host, Barry Sheets, is not with us, and that is because of a combination of his voice and the fact that he is in a training session for some work on a contract that he is doing. So I am left once again to do the program solo today. Because it's Friday, I'm going to do my best to wrap up everything we've been discussing in the last week about the National Defense Authorization Act, and we started with the presidential use of the signing statements to attempt to get around having to actually enforce the law constitutionally. The President of the United States, President Obama, has taken the position that he has the right to decide where and when laws are enforced, that he is the only constitutional agent involved in bringing the laws into full force. And we're going to discuss why that's incorrect. And it definitely is incorrect. To give you an idea, when we started this discussion, we talked about how President Obama had recently signed the National Defense Authorization Act, which basically allows the executive branch to use the military to detain people who are suspected of being agents for foreign powers, and that includes United States citizens. There is a problem with that, and as we've discussed over the last couple days, there is an interesting Supreme Court decision that is called Ex Parte Milligan. And what Ex Parte Milligan, or Ex Parte Milligan, what it does is it basically forbids the arrest of United States citizens by military officials, the arrest, detention, trial. And that's an important aspect of this as well. Ex Parte Milligan basically says that is not possible when there is an existing up-and-running federal justice system. So in other words, there is a problem with the National Defense Authorization Act because it says, well, no, that's legal. It is legal for the military to be used to arrest, detain, and try even United States citizens if they may be aiding and abetting foreign powers. Constitutionally, that particular thing already has a name. It's called treason. And United States citizens can be tried for treason in a federal court. What the National Defense Authorization Act wants to do is brand these people as agents of a foreign power and treat them as non-citizens. People cannot be stripped of their citizenship by the mere fiat of the Declaration of Martial Law. And in fact, what the beauty of Ex Parte Milligan is that martial law can't be declared in places, and we're going to talk about another piece of this puzzle today, but martial law cannot be declared in a place where the United States has a fully functioning civil authority. We're going to discuss some of the building blocks of Ex Parte Milligan, and one of the most important building blocks is called Ex Parte Merriman. A lot of people have heard of Ex Parte Merriman, and a lot of have not. So let's do the background of Ex Parte Merriman real quick. Lieutenant John Merriman was in the Maryland Cavalry. And remember, in these days, and this is 1861, states had their own militias, and those included cavalry and artillery and all those things, infantry. And John Merriman was in the Maryland Cavalry. Now, if you recall your history, Maryland was one of those states called a border state, and Maryland was a state that was contemplating secession from the Union. In order to stop that, Abraham Lincoln could not afford to have Maryland withdraw from the Union because, if you'll remember, Virginia had already withdrawn from the Union, and that would have meant that Washington, D.C. would have been a little federal island in the middle of the Confederacy. He simply couldn't allow that, even though he was denying that the Confederacy had actually left the Union. He simply could not allow himself to be surrounded by Confederate soldiers. So what he did was, he declared martial law. There's a real constitutional question about whether the president can on his own declare martial law, and it seems pretty clear that he cannot. There is a real question about whether secession is legal or not. We're not going to get into that here, but the fact is the president believed that as commander-in-chief, he had the duty to declare martial law, and along with that, he suspended the writ of habeas corpus. What he did was he essentially appointed generals to run his military government in the state of Maryland, and he appointed generals and he gave them the authorization to suspend the writ of habeas corpus. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there is no authority in the United States Constitution that would allow the President of the United States to order generals in the United States military, first of all, to act as a police force, second of all, to, on their own authority, suspend the writ of habeas corpus. This trooper, Merriman, who was taking his cavalry, or attempting to recruit members of his cavalry, over to the Confederate Army. And there were Maryland units who served in the Confederate Army, just as there were some Indiana units that served in the Confederate Army, and there were units from a number of states. Kentucky units, there were Missouri units, there were Illinois units, there were, I think there may have been some Ohio units. I'm not positive about that, but that served in the Confederate Army. Little quick history lesson. Trooper Merriman was arrested on the order of military authority and imprisoned. And what he did was he filed for a writ of habeas corpus, the federal court system, because he argued he was under the authority of the Maryland courts and that martial law was not something that was permitted to be declared under the current circumstances, with Congress out of session and the president sitting, being the only arbiter of what the law was at the time. Here's a little interesting tidbit about this case. The Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, who issued the writ of habeas corpus to Merriman, was named Roger Taney, T-A-N-E-Y, Roger Taney. And Roger Taney was a Maryland resident, and he is infamous for having issued the Dred Scott decision. Taney was actually sitting as a justice of the Maryland Circuit Court, as well as the Supreme Court Chief Justice. And this happened a lot in the 18th and 19th centuries, that very often Supreme Court justices held a second job as a district or circuit court judges. And they had to actually do what they called riding a circuit, which is where the name of the judgeship came from. Taney issues this decision as a Maryland Circuit Court Justice. What Taney did was order the general that whose name was Cadwallader to bring Merriman before the court, and Cadwallader refused. So Taney issued what was called a writ of attachment for Cadwallader, which basically required a U.S. Marshal to arrest him and bring him before the court to hear the reasons why he refused to present this prisoner for his hearing. And basically, the military kept the U.S. Marshal from doing his duty. So in other words, what basically happened was the United States military declared itself above the level of the United States court system due to this quasi-legal, probably illegal, declaration of martial law. In response, Taney went ahead and issued a writ of habeas corpus for Trooper Merriman. In that writ of habeas corpus, Taney gave some very important legal reasons that apply on the National Defense Authorization Act. Let's hear what Taney had to say. Taney argued that Merriman could very easily have been brought to trial before a federal court in Baltimore He said, quote, if the authority which the Constitution has confided to the judicial department and judicial officers may thus, upon any pretext or under any circumstances, be usurped by the military power at its discretion, the people of the United States are no longer living under a government of laws, but every citizen holds life, liberty, and property at the will and pleasure of the army officer in whose military district he may happen to be found. He also admitted that he had no power to enforce his ruling because, in essence, the United States military had declared a military dictatorship, something that the Constitution does not permit. Well, now let's look at how Abraham Lincoln responded to Taney's order. Lincoln explained to Congress that he had empowered generals throughout the country, and this is a quote from Kevin Gutzman's The Politically Incorrect Guide to the United States Constitution. Lincoln responded to Taney's order by explaining to Congress that he had empowered generals throughout the country to suspend the writ of habeas corpus as necessary. He asked, are all the laws but one to go unexecuted and the government itself go to pieces lest that one be violated? His implicit answer was no. And so he would decide from time to time which particular laws to ignore and which constitutional provisions to violate in his quest to subjugate the Confederacy. Ladies and gentlemen, this is exactly what we've been talking about with the president's choice to issue signing statements with bills that proclaim that he does not like sections of them and therefore will not be enforcing parts of them. The president of the United States does not have that choice except in times of constitutional crisis. You could argue that the United States was definitely in a constitutional crisis. However, all these constitutional crises make the president subject to an impeachment if he refuses to obey the highest law of the land, which is the Constitution of the United States of America. Now let me read you a section out of Article 2, which deals with the executive power. I'm going to read now from Article 2, Section 3. I'm only going to read a little section of it. And the president is required to, quote, take care that the laws be faithfully executed and shall commission all the officers of the United States. What that means is the president can't pick and choose which laws he gets to enforce and which ones he doesn't. Again, this would ignite a constitutional crisis, which should lead to an impeachment process. But the fact is, the currently sitting Speaker of the House really just doesn't have the stomach or the spine to rein in the sitting president. And the unfortunate part of this is, every time the President of the United States is allowed to usurp congressional authority and usurp court authority, that authority is very rarely ever given back. In fact, you will find people that will argue in favor of the fact that a precedent has been set because some president did this or did that, that was not a constitutional act, and therefore the Congress did nothing or the courts did nothing, and therefore that power now belongs to him. Well, no, the only powers that belong to him are the powers outlined in the United States Constitution. What's interesting about this, there is another case that I'm just going to talk about really quickly. Some people try to claim that the National Defense Authorization Act has been okayed by a subsequent Supreme Court case called Ex Parte Quirion. And Ex Parte Quirion really has nothing to do with Ex Parte Merriman or Ex Parte Milligan, in that case, Ex Parte Quirion, the defendant who attempted to get a writ of habeas corpus, it was a group of defendants that were German spies who had been landed by submarine and had been captured. And in fact, the only thing that is covered by Ex Parte Quirion, the final decision had to do with what are known as foreign illegal combatants. And foreign illegal combatants are combatants who are in civilian or uniform of the other side. In other words, they are spies. And the Supreme Court found not in favor They found against Quirion and ex-party Quirion, and they were all executed, as they should have been. They were combatants on American, captured on American soil. Well, once again, we're out of time, and I thank you for being with us. Be with us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.